The Space Case Sarah Show with space nerds Kovi and Benjamin. Who is Space Case Sarah?
Spunky, edgy, smart, funny, and a rebel feminist.
Now, witness it yourself on iRock Space Radio.
Hello, space enthusiasts, and welcome to another episode of the Space Case Sarah Show with my incredibly talented, nerdy, fantastic co-hosts, the space nerds, Kobe and Benjamin. We're celebrating today. Well, first of all, let's start. Today is aluminum. Am I correct in thinking?
Well, we say aluminum, but our co-host probably says aluminium, and he's wrong.
What? Do you really?
My secret power, having lived outside of Australia for 10 years, is that I don't remember what the Australian way of saying something is. So, like, I'm not sure whether aluminum or aluminium is correct. But what I can tell you is that it's shiny.
It is. Actually, I looked it up. They're both correct.
I do know if you wear it in a tin foil hat shape form, it will protect you from aliens. It's about the extent of
and you get respect from others.
Yes, I am we're incompetent. Nope. What word was used?
I think they called us imbecile.
Oh, incompetent imbeciles. It was a combo.
There's some alliteration with it too. Yeah, ignorant imbecile.
Ignorant
imbeciles.
Rolls off the tongue.
That is apparently what we are on the Space Case Sarah Show, according to our internet fans. So thank you.
Just one fan.
Singular.
In relation to a past episode of Conspiracy Theories. So aluminum is shiny. I guess that's the takeaway for the element of the week.
I do have a fun fact, like an actual one.
Do you have any fun facts for it? Yeah.
I mean, there were a couple of things that I thought were kind of interesting as I was doing, you know, the old Google. But I think what was kind of crazy was that aluminum was kind of found in these other forms initially, and then it was only properly produced as aluminum as we know it today in the early 1800s by a physicist called Hans Christian Oersted. And he was the same dude who discovered that electricity or electrical currents produce magnetic fields, which has been a huge game changer. So Oersted discovered that and, you know, both of those things. And since then, we found the ability to now produce aluminum en masse, kind of industrialized processes, it's gone from being almost like a precious metal to something that is in our everyday lives. I mean, the first satellite launched into space, Sputnik 1, was produced of two aluminum spheres or aluminium spheres, depending on where you're listening from. but yeah, it's everywhere. It's in our lives. So that's my aluminum factoids.
Oh, fantastic. It is everywhere in our lives. And I will say it actually is one of the banes of my existence because I am allergic to it in deodorant.
Oh, yeah. Really?
And so, yes, very, very, very much so.
When you say bane, all I'm thinking is, I was born in the darkness. Well, that's kind of like Kermit the Frog
wearing.
About
as evil as that, too.
Wrong voice.
it's Kermit wearing Bane's mask, so you can't tell who's under it.
I feel like our best episodes are when either we're overslept or like drinking whiskey. So apparently this is where, or not overslept, underslept, whatever. See, I am underslept. Not Kavi. Benjamin, your turn in the spotlight, sir.
My turn in the spotlight.
Would you like to share with us?
Sure. If all goes according to plan, the aluminum episode will air on November 5th. So 2 days late. Happy birthday, Mom.
And
write that down, people. And November 5th is a big time happy astronaut birthday to Robert Sanker, who flew on one shuttle flight. Alan Poindexter and Benjamin Drew, who each flew on 2 shuttle flights, and Charles Hobaugh, who flew on 3 shuttle flights. So wow. Astronauts like being born today. And happy, yeah, and happy scientist birthday to Leon Philippe Tesserank de Bort. That's a good name. A French meteorologist who discovered the stratosphere in 1902. Ooh. And happy scientist birthday to Fred Whipple, an American astronomer who first proposed that comets were actually dirty snowballs back in 1950, and that was confirmed during a flyby of Halley's Comet in 1986.
Oh, Whipple.
Was he the inventor of the Whipple bat?
Yes. Yeah, and he also invented the Whipple bat, which we...
Did he really?
Sure. And he also created...
Are you just messing with me?
No. And no dessert is complete without Whipple cream on top. You got to have that Whipple cream on top.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah.
Look, guys, I'm in a vulnerable state. Don't mess with me.
Do you also know which other famous day it is on November 5th? Do you remember?
Well, Carl Sagan's birthday is November 9th, so it's not that.
No, Sarah was in the right direction. It's Guy Fawkes Day. Remember the 5th of November.
Oh, God. Yes, it is Guy Fawkes Day.
It is Guy Fawkes Day.
Come on.
I have to backtrack really quick to your whole spiel. For those of our audience who can't see what happened, when Benjamin referenced his own name in that lineup, he pointed to himself like a child would. That's like, that's my name. like that's me. and then backtrack to happy birthday, Benjamin's mom. Like, you kind of sailed over that really fast. It's happy birthday to you. We have to give the biggest birthday wishes to your mom. So, but that was a lot. That was quite a lot of, lot of people. Apparently, when yes. Comes, the astronauts.
It never happens. Just astronauts are just popping out everywhere.
They're just popping out left and right. Oh. So, this is the aluminum episode where we apparently should be wearing aluminum hats to prevent, I don't know.
We absolutely should have.
All right. Well, in space news today, though, as of the day of recording this, so it will be actually quite a few weeks from now when you're going to hear this episode, but we're going to celebrate it and acknowledge it anyway today. DART was successful. NASA confirms that we have officially moved an asteroid into a different orbital pattern. I think it's by the Mega Boop moved it by 32 minutes. So it pushed it in by 32 minutes.
It slowed its orbit by 32 minutes. Yeah.
It slowed its orbit by 32 minutes. Yeah. And that is super significant because if, say, something was headed towards Earth, we only would need to get it to move by 9 minutes. So that's a pretty solid push. But I am wondering, though, does anybody know? Is that what they expected? Did it perform better than expected, or is that
It's about three times better than what they expected. I think they were aiming for a 10-minute differential in the orbital period, and they lowered it by 32 minutes. So, it's a mega success from the Mega Boop.
So a big boop, but you know that's one thing. I actually was having a conversation with somebody about this today, that it's one thing, though, like that was, you know, we saw the orbit and we knew how to calculate for it. And it's a good thing that we know that we did it. It will be interesting if there is indeed ever an asteroid that is coming towards Earth. I think that will be a lot more like variables and unknowns. But at least we know that it is possible. You know,
I don't know who it would be more unknowns. I think that was like the benefit of doing this in a closed system, so to speak, that like it's orbiting around another asteroid. So we know what the effect is. If we see an asteroid heading towards Earth, the main thing that's influencing it, like energy wise, forces wise, will just be its path relative to the sun. So like now we know what we can do. And I think it's like a huge deal now that, you know, we can basically redirect an asteroid.
Yeah. Right? What if it was really, really big?
Like, well, as we discussed with Joan Marie on this show, we asked her that question. And basically, they just for the larger the size of the asteroid, basically they could just, it's a linear calculation, the larger the projectile.
Okay. Although I believe in that case, it would technically be a gigaboop, not a megaboop.
Gigaboop.
Yeah.
Oh my God. But yes, congratulations to Joan, who was on this show, and her team. Yes. And it is exciting that we have like confirmation now that it worked. And I guess, yeah, now we know we can maybe do something, which is exciting.
Nice. Just start booping everything. Boop, 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 boop.
Just go around and just was like, we own this universe now.
Have you guys seen...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I'm embarrassed to admit that I only saw the movie Starship Troopers for the first time.
Did you really?
And I had very low expectations, so I was pleasantly surprised.
Even those are too high.
But no, like that whole thing of like, an alien race that was launching asteroids towards Earth? I mean, we would be able to defend against that now. Like the whole plot of Starship Troopers.
Just by pooping.
Yeah, like it would suddenly be slightly less realistic as a movie.
I was going to say, does this make this, though, a higher credible movie in our, you know, like our episode that we talked about what movies were scientifically accurate and what ones weren't? Did Starship Troopers suddenly move up the list
in so many other ways?
Every explosion in space was just like a dagger in my heart.
Absolutely.
I feel like
no
it just
reason.
Moved up a couple of notches on the ranking.
There's absolutely no reason for anything in Starship Troopers to happen, period. There's no reason for any of that.
Except cool four-legged creatures that they call arachnids.
They have that. That's right. They have the that space station that goes around the Earth, like that big ring station around the Earth. Mm-hmm. That's kind of cool. That would be kind of cool to see one day.
But goes around the moon, because I think.
We're around, whatever. Either way, that would be a cool thing to see. And bugs shooting asteroids out their butts at us from across the galaxy is just... They're bugs, and they shoot asteroids at us from across the universe with no technology. They just somehow send them through a wormhole. And
I love how we... We've set into this episode with a minimal game plan, and we're almost to the end of the first segment. So we're going to wrap it up with reminding you that you can follow us on social media. I'm Space Case Sarah, and these guys are Fun Fact Science with Kavi on all the platforms. Science actually science on all the platforms. And we encourage you also to head over to irockspaceradio.com. You won't have an opportunity to enter as of right now for this, but from time to time we have additional giveaways, including things like Mova globes, which are these amazing globes that spin like almost like magic. Yep, Kavi has Jupiter there.
I entered the contest.
You did? I have a Mars downstairs, and they spin by Earth's gravity and solar power, Earth's magnetic. Well, whatever. That's what they say. Just let me jump it up. But we have these giveaways. Actually, this is the third time that we've had a giveaway with MOVA on our station's website. So it's definitely something to keep an eye out for on also IROC Space Radio's social media. So be sure to follow those pages too on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. So we're going to take a break and kind of keep going with the flow in the next segment. I got pitched a couple of ideas from the gentleman here, and I said, you know what? I think that this might be a great episode to let the wind, the solar wind, take where the sails lead us, and you guys talk about things that are interesting to you. Kavi has been itching for an episode on spectroscopy for a long time, and Benjamin wanted to talk about Legos. But he's got his box of Legos right there. Is that a shuttle? Yeah.
Yep.
So we're gonna take a break, and we will let the cosmic winds take us where it will. So you're listening to the Space Case Sarah Show with the space nerds Kavi and Benjamin here on iRock Space Radio.
Yes.
Welcome back to the ever disappointing return for Kavi to the Space Case Sarah show, where he once again came in second place, entering into the green room. Kavi, I don't know what to tell you. That one was really a very evident, like, Benjamin was back so fast. It was like light speed. So we're talking about whatever we feel like. And speaking of light speed, could something ever travel faster than the speed of light?
Yep.
Nope.
It just needs a booster and a lot of, like, the flame has to be like really big out the back.
Really big.
And,
yeah. Really big, big.
And I'm sure there's like a laser in there with an electron on it, and then it'll do it. Hmm. There, I figured it out.
So no.
Hold on. Can you like crack your knuckles first or something for us? You're like, ugh, physicist stepping in.
Let me put on my physics hat.
Okay. It's made out of tin foil, by the way. It's aluminum.
Yes.
Okay, go.
Yes. So now that I'm wearing my aluminium tin foil physics hat.
Aluminium. Okay, go
potato
ahead.
Tomato. Or as Australians say, nah, yeah. Basically no. The speed of light is a universal speed limit, and basically things within the universe in space-time cannot exceed that. As you get closer and closer to the speed of light, the amount of energy that you need to get faster to continue accelerating becomes greater and greater, and then you end up needing pretty much all the energy that exists in the universe or more to reach the speed of light. The thing is, this is true locally in any like local region of the universe. The thing is, when you view one region of the universe from another region, you have observer effects where light can appear to be moving faster than the speed of light, or things can appear, like these energetic bursts from exploding stars, for example, can appear to be moving faster than the speed of light, but this is an observer effect. In fact, light itself does not have any intrinsic properties or wavelengths or anything like that. Like, light doesn't experience time. In fact, I actually got a little bit of flack the other day for posting a Dave Matthews reference on Twitter from my general relativity professor, because the line from the Dave Matthews song was, if I could fly at the speed of light, I'd make it to Kenneth Major in 5,000 years. And that's what I was referencing. And the thing is, if you're moving at the speed of light, you effectively have null time. So the photon does not experience time. So yes, that's a long answer to a short question, but the basic answer is no.
But what if there's advanced technology and it could, I don't know, it could do it. Like, what about all of the, okay, no, we already did the conspiracy.
Think about warp travel. Within a warp bubble, what I said would still hold. Locally in that warp region, any future event has to be limited within what's called a light cone, right? So you would violate the laws of causality and the universe would break and not be happy.
You know, at this point right now, that sounds like a really nice vacation. I could go for the universe breaking right now. That sounds great. Benjamin, what were you doing? You were like holding a bat, but then you set it down, and then
I was
like,
very angry,
and I knocked it over and I caught it, so it wasn't making a loud noise. And
yeah,
quietly put it away.
There just was like a whole level of like action going on in your little corner of our universe here, and
it was falling over to the right of me. So, and there's something I can lean it against to the left of me. So I kind of try to carefully.
I was sure he was getting really angry with my response, and he was like, the baseball bat.
Right. Why are you going on about physics again, sir? When we should just talk about the simple things like Legos. When did you get your first Lego set? This is a really big, a real thing for Benjamin, though, by the way. He has a lot of space theme. Like, even in his screen, in the background, you can see.
He's also got a hell of a following on TikTok. I do have a hell of a following on TikTok.
What? That Sarah, have you frozen?
I think Sarah's frozen.
What?
Look at her, stunned.
She's just shocked.
Shocked.
Uh-oh.
So, we
are not
talking about Legos.
Hello.
Sarah, if you can hear us. Oh no, she cannot hear us.
She's one yes. away. And we're still recording. This
is glorious. Yeah, we're still recording.
What is happening?
This is good quality content right here. But right here. At least she missed that I opened my phone for a second and it was open on TikTok.
Well, now that Sarah's not here and we're still recording, let's talk about her. I think she's doing a bang up job organizing this little chat of ours. It's quite fun.
Oh, absolutely. Oh. Absolutely.
Oh.
There I am.
We were taking advantage of the fact that you weren't here, but we were still recording to talk about you.
Okay, great. Perfect. No, that's why I didn't want to stop though, because it does keep going. So I'll have my stream where I'm going, hello, what happened? And then I'll have you guys on the other end. Legos. That's what we were talking about. Your Legos.
My first Lego?
Yeah,
I actually remember my very first Lego. It was one of those original classic Space Sing Legos. And it was a moon base. And my parents got it for me, and I played with that all the time. I loved it. I loved it, loved it, loved it. I built it and took it apart and rebuilt it and took it apart and rebuilt it a gaggle of times. The base plate that you could put the playset on had craters on it. And that was the moon. It was great. And I took it apart and rebuilt the spaceships, I remember, in a better way. I thought they were better as a kid. I put them all in Ziploc bags or whatever bags and put them away as I got older. And it was many years later when I went back to my parents' house and I had kids of my own and I found them.
They were
still assembled the way I had assembled them.
That's awesome.
And I was very, very happy. So I have them in the house somewhere. But yeah.
That's awesome.
Did you find that you mixed and matched Lego sets? Because like I remember I had something that was, I don't remember what it was. I think it might have been a shuttle. But I also had this like cowboy themed Lego set. And I ended up mixing and matching like bits. Is that?
Of course.
I feel like some people mix and match and other people are like Lego purists.
I would say that I am probably one of those, the Lego purists. I'm also like that kind of person that doesn't like my food touching. Like they're just like Thanksgiving is my nightmare because there's just way too much that could be in contact with each other. And it also makes me think of Play-Doh. Like I used to be a Play-Doh purist, I will say, until my kids kind of opened my eyes a little bit. The first time that my daughter mixed up all the different colors of Play-Doh, I was like, there actually is something kind of like uniquely beautiful about that, right? Like almost in the sense of like entropy, like you can't undo that now. They're mixed together. There's no undoing the Play-Doh.
Having children
chaos.
Teaches you about entropy, doesn't it?
Right. But it was pretty. I mean, and then eventually it turns into a brown smudge. And then I'm like, well, that's why I didn't like it when I was a kid. But your Lego collection has been, you know, it's very comical. I've seen his like bar set up, but then there's also like Legos all around it. And so if that is not the epitome of the grown-up Benjamin that we all know and love today, it is Legos and whiskey and space.
If I want to go make myself a drink, I have to push the lunar lander out of the way. Grab the bottle behind it.
This is what we would have to do. And Benjamin, I guess if we're going to kind of do a little origin thing for you here too, not Benjamin, I'm sorry, Kavi, a little origin thing for you too. Like when did your space interest start? Like what started your journey into like, I'm interested in space?
I think it was actually not at such a young age. Like as a kid, I loved everything. I thought everything was the most interesting thing in the world. But I was very much a humanities person, and like I was planning on studying law, and that was my direction in life. And then I think when I discovered space, it was during a period where I was in the army, and I had these very long bus rides to get to and from the base that I was working on. And at the time, I was working as an electro-optics technician, so I worked with this like night vision technology that basically amplified starlight. And being on a base in the middle of nowhere, I would basically be able to like look up and say, wow, there are so many stars because I'm away from the big cities. And then pick up the night vision and say, okay, wow, there's 10,000 more stars than I thought a second ago. And I just became kind of very inspired by that. And some of the training that I had to do to get into that position was like very science-based. And I was like, oh, this science stuff is cool. Why did I think I wanted to be a lawyer? And yeah, on these like long bus rides to the base, I would, you know, start reading up about space. And I started watching Doctor Who and listening to the Star Talk podcast. And that, it all came from there. I just realized that just space was, yeah, it just filled me with a deep sense of meaning and wonder and
space. Right. It just keeps like it. There's still like it never stops. It there's no end cap to that. That's something that is why I'm stuck in the space world and drawn to it as well. Because when you start your undergrad in opera, which has really not a very tremendous future in the world, you kind of realize how exciting the space industry is because it's always growing and changing. But you're kind of the same way as me, where like when we were really little, as opposed to Benjamin, I think you were kind of fascinated with space from an early age. I do feel bad. Like my sister was really into telescopes and astronomy, and I was always sort of like meh when I was a kid. I just I don't know. It was okay, but I was definitely more focused on my little micro world and what was happening in my own personal bubble. So, yeah, I don't have any like Lego sets from childhood or any spacey things from childhood. Everything I've acquired is like Kavi, like in my adulthood years. So anyway, not to make it about me, because I wanted to talk about you guys. We wanted to talk about you also wanted to talk about spectroscopy. I can't say that word.
I will only talk about it if you can say it.
Perhaps throat wobbler mangrove.
Hold on, now I need to see it spelled out. Now I'm overthinking it. Hold on.
Actually, yeah, because it's so difficult to pronounce, people get angry and they just call it hectroscopy.
So spectroscopy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. From the word spectrum.
From the word spectrum.
Endoscopy.
Kavi yes. has been itching to talk about that. So I think that in honor of this wanting to get to know y'all, we have 15 more whole minutes up ahead. And I think that that is plenty of time to listen to that. And because I really don't have any other ideas. So let's do it. I know I'm drained. So for those of you who are listening in real time, I will still be in the Philippines when this airs. So I am right now working ahead in the school, and we're working ahead on the show. So that way I can actually kind of enjoy this vacation. So when you're listening to this, I will be on the other side of the world. I'll be pretty close to you, Kavi, actually.
Come say hi.
At each other.
I know a lot of people from Australia go up to the Philippines to dive and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, it will be, anyway, my point being, I'm just sort of like, beep. I'm like starting to beep out here a little bit mentally, which is unusual for me. I'm a bit of an energizer bunny. So we're going to take a break, and I'm just leaning back and I'm letting these guys nerd out as they will with their Legos and their
They don't knowledge call us the space nerds for nothing.
Exactly. They got to live up. It's time to earn your keep here and be the nerds you were born to be. Okay, we're going to take a break, and then we'll continue with this nonsense. You are listening to the Space Case Sarah Show with the space nerds Kavi and Benjamin here on iRock Space Radio. I'm starting this back up. What's your idea? This is the Space Case Sarah Show with the space nerds Kavi and Benjamin. Benjamin has an idea, not Benjamin. Kavi, go!
Go.
I was like kind of spitballing and like being tired brain, and the line came to me, Houston, can you hear me? And it's musical that we basically a it's a musical it's a musical retelling of the Apollo missions set to the
if
music.
I had an air filter. I could breathe some clean oxygen.
This is you know how certain TV shows have the musical episode? This is the Space Case Sarah musical episode.
I love it.
Had an air filter.
We could get Topol and everything.
Oh, Topol, man.
Oh, yeah.
This is...
Poor Sarah.
I'm so tired. I can't keep up with this though because I'm trying to think of something to matchmaker like... Houston, no Houston. We need your help.
Oh my God.
Plug me in orbit. Find me a puff.
Oh my God.
Why is this bottled food so disgusting? Oh my God. Oh my God. What is happening?
I'm going to get so much hell from the family who listen to this.
This is
glorious.
When you have two co-hosts who are both Jewish, and I'm learning so much from you both, honestly.
Shalom!
Oh, yeah.
So, I have a story about spectroscopy before you introduce this very real and interesting scientific concept to our listeners.
Yes.
It is one of my favorite things in space science, and largely because I just love the fact that like a rainbow, it gives me new meaning to a rainbow compared to what I always was taught and thought about rainbows. And now it's like, now I look at rainbows, and when you know, a prism reflects that light, I look at it as what it is, like a secret message. Like there's a like a message built in that that comes from the universe, from the cosmos. And I think that's so cool. And and yes, that had to be sung because apparently this is the musical episode of spectroscopy. And yeah, why don't you explain a little bit further to our listeners what that is about. And Benjamin, be sure to chime in too on your...
So if you look at a Pink Floyd album cover, you'll see a triangle and a white line goes to it. And as the light line hits the triangle, it starts to spread a little bit. And as it exits the other end of the triangle, it spreads even more. And it's basically showing a depiction of what happens when light hits a prism and then you scatter it into its individual wavelengths that make up the light. And if something's... Yes. If there's little markings in it, you can tell what that light is. You can take it from there, copy. I got the Pink Floyd part, and now
that was the important part.
Pink Floyd. Great album.
Every description of spectroscopy starts with the Pink Floyd comparison, so I'm glad that you got us off to a good start. But yeah, I like the way that Sarah was leading into it, because I think like the biblical interpretation that you and I might have grown up with is that like the rainbow was a message from, you know, a higher being,
deity, yes,
saying that, you know, he'll never make a flood again. Whereas the real message that's there is, what is the chemical composition of the thing that light is passing through? So in the same way that a prism breaks up light into its component parts and you see like a full rainbow, if you actually pass that light through a nebulous gas cloud in space or something like that, you're seeing what that gas cloud is comprised of. And so the way that this, I mean, like, am I allowed to dive into this and explain it? I get to explain the science?
Yes. We're at 4 minutes and 34 seconds into this episode, so you have like a solid 9 minutes.
And Benjamin's just like,
bring it.
Okay, yeah. In a
you
nutshell,
can bring it down to like four.
Keep it clean. It's a family show.
Family show, yes. So none of the rude parts of spectroscopy.
Not the naughty
spectrum
bits.
Without the ectrum. So
spectrum the whole...
So poop. So the whole thing.
Just gotta get out there.
No poop jokes. No poop jokes. Yeah. So I'll start by saying like the thing that my first physics teacher told me, and he said, I'm not allowed to tell you this because it's not technically right, but photons are food for electrons. And I said, what the hell does that mean? And he says, every time a photon is swallowed by an electron, the electron jumps up and it gets energy. In the same way that we get energy from eating food, electrons get energy from absorbing photons. And so, you know, we've spoken in previous episodes about how when you have an atom, there are electrons that are kind of approximately, let's say, orbiting around the nucleus. So, you know, you might be picturing these orbital rings kind of like a star system. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, what we, you know from chemistry or on a deeper level, we know from quantum mechanics, is that there are only specific distances or energy levels that the electrons can orbit at. And if an electron absorbs a photon, if it eats a photon, it gets additional energy and it can jump up to the next energy level. Mm-hmm. But that's not always stable. And so sometimes it'll hang around there for a while and be like, actually, no, never mind. And it will hop back down. And when it hops back down, it has to release energy. And so it will be able to give off a photon. And so basically spectroscopy works in this way where if we look at the spectrum, we look at the rainbow of light that's passing through something, we will see additional light in some places from electrons jumping down levels. These are emission lines. And we'll see missing light, these kind of like black patches or the missing spots, like Benjamin said, where light has been absorbed, and they're called absorption lines. Yeah. And so basically when you look at the absorption lines of light that's passing through some object in space, what that's telling you is this chemical element, that chemical element are present in the material that light is passing through. And the electrons in that material are absorbing some of those photons. So it's missing photons. That was 3 minutes. I can do another six, but I probably shouldn't.
Well, so questions. I think a fun takeaway from that, though, is when people are kind of skeptical about how can we know so much about different stars and different planets and things that are so far away from us, a lot of that is based in that spectroscopy, but it's I don't want to say science, but but a lot of it is because of that, like when we're in the field of astrobiology and we're looking for maybe biomarkers or something in atmospheres of planets, we wait for it to pass by a star, and then right in that tiny little curve of the atmosphere, the light will pass through it, and then we can measure what might be in the atmosphere of that planet. Because I've had people ask me that before too. They're like, how can we possibly know? Like, sometimes some people even are like, how do we really know the density of Jupiter or like the mass of Jupiter or, you know, these planets? And it's just kind of, it's to me, it's again, the bane of my existence, but it is so amazing. It's chemistry and it's understanding the bane of my, well, that's aluminum. Is the bane of my existence, but it is knowing what it's comprised of, and then its atomic mass, and then we can do the equations from there. So it's, to me, all very, 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 very cool, and tying it back to my introduction into that, it is absolutely just marvelous to me how much more amazing something as simple as a rainbow can be now when I understand the full complexity of what entails in that.
And yeah, I think that the message is not about a flood. It's about what is this material that's billions of miles away comprised of.
Yeah, it's amazing. Oh, I love science.
Benjamin, you picked up a baseball bat at one point.
He did.
No, it's a fun thing to hold. I don't know.
Threatening. It's very threatening in this show. Kavi's talking about things, and then he's like,
for those of you who can't see, I was just kind of hugging it. I wasn't brandishing it or like waving it around or scowling. I was just
Benjamin's
holding it.
Mother, we need to have a talk about your son and his anger issues.
No.
I'm just kidding.
It's a great birthday present to her listening to this episode and hearing that.
It is. Happy birthday. Benjamin,
birthday,
what is your favorite?
Your son's out of control.
In science. Did you have a favorite subject in science?
Did I have a favorite subject in science?
Yeah.
Golly. Anything sciencey. I really enjoyed those classes. I did very well in those classes. And every other thing else. I loved history classes. They were wonderful. I was lucky to have some really good history teachers that could really tell a good story and really explain what happened in
Mesopotamia or wherever. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. The point is, it didn't really stick in my head. But all the science teachers that I had, I remember so many lessons so clearly. And I had a chemistry teacher named Mr. Baird, who ran through his classrooms and ran through his lessons. I mean, and everything was great. And if anybody had a question and what happens if I do this, what happens if I do that? He was like, try it. Let's see what happens. I don't know.
Yeah, let's light it on fire and see what happens. Yeah.
Very much so.
I know. The chemistry teachers are the best in let's the sense that they get to do the reactions, which is kind of like a magic show almost. So I feel you on that. I would say mine, actually, though, I did really enjoy biology only in the fact that, and people hate it for this reason, is that biology is so sloppy almost, because you'll learn this whole way of everything works, right? And then they're like, but here's when it doesn't. And it's like you like spend forever learning about like how some sort of system works in a cell, and they're like, blah, blah, blah. But then every once in a while, these enzymes will plug into this bot because they just do that.
One bit of interesting space news that I can. It's technically embargoed until 2 days after we record this, but since we will be releasing this shortly after that.
Look at that.
We're using the art of spectroscopy. The European Southern Observatory's VLT, the Very Large Telescope, because astronomers are great at naming things, have discovered the heaviest element ever found in an exoplanet atmosphere.
Really?
Barium. Yes.
Really?
Ooh.
Yeah. I don't like barium.
His friends call him Barry.
You did not hear it first, but if you could time travel, you would have heard it here first.
Yeah. If you could fly at the speed of light.
Exciting. Also, things that astronomers are super good at is breaking embargoes within their circles.
This doesn't count as breaking an embargo, though.
It doesn't. I'm just saying that as soon as anything gets released where they're like, big news going to get released next week, everyone's like, it's going to be about this. And nobody like outright says it, but they're like, I think it has to do with something with this. Like the black hole was kind of like that. And the phosphine was kind of like that. Like I
mean, you have thousands of people collaborating on these projects. And if you recall from the conspiracy episode, or from the fluorine episode, there is a mathematical dependency, like on the number of people involved in a project to how long it can stay a secret for. So
yeah,
yes,
it is what it is.
I'm also having a mild panic attack that that the first whole chunk of what we recorded here is not saved. I don't know, we'll find out. So we're gonna wrap up the show, and if it's recorded, great, and if not, I don't know if hitting refresh was a bad idea or if I should have stopped, and I don't know. We'll find out and see how much more frustrated I can get in the course of one singular day. Is there a theoretical mathematical equation to see how frustrated Sarah can get in one
day? The IRS auditor will tell you all about it today.
Okay. Okay, good.
But the speed of light will be the limiting factor.
Okay, the speed of light. We can't get more frustrated than the speed of light. This is like our Eagles per Freedom. Speed of light to frustration ratio. Nothing can surpass that, except maybe, I don't know, a mother's frustration with her children. I don't know. It's possible. Thanks, guys, for bearing with the looseness of this theme, though I do feel like we learned a lot. We gleaned a lot from this episode, both about your interests in science, and as always, we have a good time.
Lots of gleaning.
Let's glean from this, the wins that we have. And thank you to everyone
in glean
to listening to our show. We really do appreciate your support. It has been over 2 months we've been on the air together now. So we are really kind of hitting our stride. And I think that we have some pretty exciting. Wow. See, I almost did that thing where I'm like, we have some exciting things in the future. We do. I have a couple of guests tentatively lined up that what? Are pretty exciting. I'm not going to say that one might be the chief scientist of a really big deal telescope, but it might be the chief scientist of a really big telescope. Benjamin, you look confused.
No, is it a very large telescope?
It's a very large space telescope, and it's the chief
engineer. Does it rhyme with bubble?
Not Bubbles.
Is it your dog?
Not my Bubbles. No, I do call him Hubble Bubble or Hubble's B Tuna. Don't ask me why. Oh. This one's with the Games.
Telescope, Welloscope.
Games. Schweb. I don't know. I'm not really Jelly good. Webby? It's a webby one. Yeah. We're going to have We're going to have that. And then I've been talking to a friend of mine who said he'd be interested on coming on. He is actually a lawyer specializing in space law. Like that's.
You've mentioned this before.
Yeah. He's going to be
awesome.
Doing stuff in space law, which I think is really, really, really interesting because he started his platform kind of off of that oddity, like space law. Why would we need space law? But holy do we need space law, because you know, when everybody's trying to get to the moon, we got to have some rules. Like
if I order room service at that space hotel and they forget to bring me my breakfast, can I sue them in California? I gotta know.
There are a lot of legalities that are ahead of us in the space industry. So anyway, look forward to, there are some cool people that I am starting to line up for this show that we're going to bring on. And as always, we're also doing some of this for good causes. So the James Webb Telescope guest that we're hopefully going to be getting on will be co-presented by the Space Prize, which is our next nonprofit that we want to highlight on this show. So look forward to that. Again, thank you for supporting our show. You can find me as Space Case Sarah everywhere. You can find Benjamin as Actually Science, Science Actually, just ruffling the feathers all over the internet with his memes. And you can find Fun Fact Science, Fun Fact Science with Kavi. Also on all of the platforms, not making as many ruffly waves, but he makes a lot of legendary status memes that get circulated around NASA. So if he could retire off of that, I think he would. And go to irockspaceradio.com and listen to our other shows. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Space Case Sarah Show here on iRock Space Radio.